Hello, my name is Samantha Marstall. I'm 15 years old. Today, December 5th, I'm speaking with Vicky Meek, who is my grandmother. We're recording this interview in Chantilly, Virginia. So, what was your childhood home like?
My childhood home was very old to begin with. It was the first home that my father's parents moved into when they came over from Romania, probably around 1916. It wasn't insulated. We were rather poor. So it was hot in the summer and very cold in the winter. The main part of the house consisted of four rooms. We had a living room, a kitchen, and two bedrooms. Off of the kitchen, they had at one time partitioned part of that off, and we had a bathroom. And the bathroom only had a bathtub and a toilet in that. And the only sink we had in our whole house was a kitchen sink. At one time, also, there was another room built off of the kitchen. You step two steps down. And that one was definitely not insulated at all. And it was the room that my grandmother used as her bedroom. And what's interesting compared to today is that nobody had trash pickup. What we had in the basement was an incinerator. It was a gas-powered incinerator. And you would take your garbage downstairs and put it in the incinerator. It looked like a great big cast iron kind of stove, and it had a stove pipe that went up through the roof, the chimney. And you get it full, and then you light the incinerator, and it would burn everything. And so that really contributed to, you know, pollution in the air, but nobody thought about that way back then. And the other thing was that it was really unsafe, but kids knew not to go near it because it wasn't insulated from the heat. I mean, you could go over there and you just touch it, you'd be burnt really, really badly. So yeah, you couldn't have anything around it. So that's what my house was like.
What was the name of the city you grew up in again?
Canton, Ohio.
So when you were in Canton, Ohio, who was your best friend?
My best friend lived across the street from me, and her name was Carol Ross. And she was one of the oldest of five children in an Italian family. And she and I were very close friends.
So, speaking about your childhood, what was the most rebellious thing you've ever done when you were a kid?
Okay, I thought about that answer, and I'm going to my high school years, since you're in high school. And when I was in high school, I wasn't what you would call rebellious, and so I was really trying hard to think of what I had done. And I think what I did, I know what I did. I lied to my mother about where I was when I came home really late one night, and I had been with my boyfriend, and we were making, well, this is rebellious, we were making out, lost track of the time, and he had an old car that would break down a lot and stuff like that. And when I got home, I was really, you know, like probably more than an hour late getting home, and I lied to my mother and told her that his car had broken down. And she believed it because this car did break down a lot, yeah. But it hadn't broken down. So that was my big rebellious thing.
How was growing up in Ohio different from here?
Well, for one thing, you're talking about several generations. When I was growing up in Ohio, I was born in 1946, so it was what I remember, the very early 50s. And everything was different. The politics was different. The quality of life was different. It was right after World War II. People were still very frugal because of most of our parents lived through the Great Depression. And it was really the father knows best type of place, you know, very traditional homes. Mothers did not work. I didn't know any mother who worked. Mothers were homemakers. The only mothers that really had to work were widows or something like that. But I didn't know any firsthand. The dads worked. I grew up in a poor neighborhood, so Most of the dads worked in factory jobs. Some of them, the most education most of them had was maybe a high school education. And my neighborhood was very ethnically mixed. We just had many, many different nationalities just on my block. Mm-hmm. So it, in most homes, we only had one car. You didn't need two because mom was always home. Another thing that when I was in school, not in high school, but in elementary school, everybody walked home for lunch. Never had lunch in school. You walked home for lunch, and then you had to walk back. So four times a day, you had to walk. And it was really bad in Ohio during the winter, because even during the snow, we'd have to put on our boots and snow pants or something and trudge home and back. So that's what it was like for me. So you just can't compare it.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different.
So going back to the diversity in your town, I'm just curious, compared to Chantilly right now, do you think, what was the difference in, ethnicities from here in Ohio when you were growing up?
Okay, what I've noticed here, and I could be wrong, but what I've noticed that when we talk about the ethnic mix here, it's usually Asian or Middle Eastern people or Mexican are the primary nationalities I notice here in Virginia. When I grew up, for example, my street, we were Romanian and brought up in the Eastern Orthodox Church. My father and grandmother spoke Romanian, but wouldn't speak to me or my brother in Romanian. But at any rate, across the street was my best friend Carol, whose family was Italian. The parents and grandparents could speak Italian, but the kids weren't spoken to in Italian. Another one across the street was a Greek house. There was a Spaniard from Barcelona, Spain. Another side of me was a family from Croatia. So the difference is that my neighborhood was mostly Eastern European, what they called the old country. It was always referred to as the old country. And so once again, that was completely different. And the thing too I've noticed is that they were very, very proud of coming over here and becoming American citizens. And that's why they wouldn't speak to their grandchildren in their native language. They only spoke English because they had to learn English, and they were so proud to be Americans, and they passed that down to their grandchildren, that we were American. They were very patriotic to their new country, and they instilled that in us. So that's a big, big difference too.
Awesome. So finishing with your childhood, what do you think your favorite childhood memory was?
Oh, this one's going to surprise you, because I thought about that, and I'm smiling as I'm talking, because it was going to my mother's, my Grandma Ruby, down in southeastern Ohio. She lived out in the country, and my brother and I, on Saturday nights in the summer, would go to square dances. They had real old-time square dancing in the old one-room schoolhouses that were still there. And in the middle of the evening, they would have all the kids come, and we would hand churn ice cream. So we'd churn our own ice cream, make our own ice cream. And that was the only time my brother and I didn't fight, and we actually danced together, because he was good, and we loved going square dancing. So that's one of my favorite memories. Oh, the other thing was, they had a special dance there also during the night that's called, I don't know where it came from, what country originally, but it was called a Shottish. And it was a dance where everybody would get into a big line and go around the floor. And it was almost like playing, the chairs. When you try to sit down in the chairs.
Musical chairs.
But we're all on our feet and walking, and you're all a couple. And all of a sudden, when they stop the music, whoever's in front of this one particular place won the prize, and the prize was a homemade cake, a big cake or a big pie or something like that, some kind of homemade goodie that somebody contributed for that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just really good, wholesome. It sounds corny by today's standards, mm-hmm. you know. And they had, it was all live music and the caller, and yeah, it was fun.
That's so cute.
It was fun.
So moving on to, as you're older,
can they hear you?
Oh yeah. Did you get the freedom to choose a career, or was your career forced upon you?
Oh boy, did I have freedom. I did have freedom because my mother and father had some of the old country thoughts that girls didn't need an education beyond high school, because girls just got married. They were going to marry somebody, and that somebody was going to take care of them, and they were going to be housewives. And that didn't set well with me. And because I didn't know where this knight on the shining armor on a white horse was going to come from. And I wanted more education, so I went behind their back. I found my girlfriend Carol came home. She was a year older than me, and she was a year ahead in high school. And she came home one time with all these different brochures about different vocations and so on. And one had radiology technology in it. And that was, I read it, and I thought, that's for me. And so I went behind my parents' back, and I went to the school, all of the medical education that for nurses to become an RN, everything was hospital-based programs. They weren't connected with a university or any kind of college or school. And so I went to the hospital, it happened to be the one I was born in, talked to the director of education there, and found out what she recommended. I take my senior year, and I got in. I was accepted, and it was very small. Only 7 people a year are accepted. And from the first day on through 43 years later, it was the right career for me. I loved it. Mm-hmm. It just turned out really well.
What did you do exactly in your job? Like, what was an average day for you?
Oh, my gosh. It depended on, in radiology, you would rotate duties. It could be depending on where you were. Once, you know, every day you'd come in, and that day you were assigned to fluoroscopy or surgery or portables up on the floor or the catheter room or something like that. And sometimes you'd do it for a week at a time. You were scheduled to a certain room that would do certain tests a week at a time. And you never knew what the day was going to be like, because you never knew what was going to come in through the emergency room. You never knew what you're going to get up in surgery. You didn't know what kind of people you're going to see as patients, because sometimes people were, you know, really easy to work with. And I'm not talking about the ones who are in bad accidents who are really, really sick. I'm just talking about people who come in for a routine chest x-ray or something's kind of hurting, and you never knew what you were going to face, because sometimes they could be very, very difficult to work with. And that's for just plain diagnostic. But my passion was the last 25 years of my career, I specialized in doing CAT scans, CTs. And that was what I... Whoops, excuse me, Samantha. I just sneezed, and we had to stop recording there for a second. And I'm trying to pick up where I left off. I think I was talking about doing CAT scans, but that really was my passion, and it was it meant a lot to me. I used my brain every day. I got to visualize what people look like on the inside more than the outside. In fact, it got to the point where a lot of times I wouldn't recognize a face or name, but if I would take their CAT scan images and flip them up on the view box and take a look at their insides, I would remember everything we talked about and what the exam was like and everything like that. So it was a little weird. I got to know people better on the inside than the outside. So,
so if you could change your profession, would you?
No.
You liked it.
I was lucky. I liked it. There were a lot of people who didn't think it it was much of a profession. They didn't know that much about it. At least that was the excuse I used. They didn't know how challenging it was, and it really is. In fact, I just saw an article the other day where when I first started, it was primarily women who worked in radiology, and the only men who worked, ironically, the men were the bosses. They were the supervisors. There was never a woman who was a supervisor. And we didn't get paid much at all. The pay was very, very little. Nowadays, they're looking for women to come in. The pay has changed. The pay has increased a lot. There's many more specialties, not only CT, but ultrasound, MRI, all kinds of different things like that. And they're paying a lot more. And now they're looking for women to come in because it's all men. So, yeah.
So moving on to Grampy.
Aw.
Her husband, I'm wondering, where and when did you meet him?
Okay. This is very atypical, and I never recommended my children or my granddaughters to do what my husband and I did. We were set up. We were set up by a secretary. He was finished with college. His degree was in biochemistry. And it was in 1968 he had been accepted to go on and get his master's degree down at Texas A&M, but Uncle Sam had different plans for him. So when he graduated, he could not get a deferment, what they call the deferment from going into the military, to get his master's. And he was going to be drafted into the Army, and he knew he didn't want to go in the Army. But at any rate, he knew he wanted to go into the Air Force, and so he went and talked to the Air Force recruiter, and he found out at that time he would be going away in about 3 months, and he would have to start off in basic training and then go into officer school and so on, which he did. But at any rate, in the meantime, for the 3 months, he worked in hematology, or the blood lab, right across the hall from where I was. And the secretary had, for some reason, decided that he and I should meet. And he didn't want to meet somebody because he was going away really soon. And I had broken up with somebody I had gone with. And I thought, I don't want to go out with another guy. I had no desire to whatsoever. I had seen what he looked like, and I thought he had the best smile I had ever seen. He was just really kind of cute like that, but I just wasn't, you know, in the market for another boyfriend. And he saw me, but he thought I was attractive, but once again, he didn't want to commit. And this woman just bugged the heck out of us until finally I know, at least on my part, she said, well, what if he just, you know, can I give him your phone number so you can just go out on a Coke date, you know, go get a Coke and a hamburger? I said, oh, gosh, okay, yeah, all right, go ahead and do it. And then he had done the same thing. She had worn him down. And he said, yeah, okay, I'll call her. And so he called me, and I thought, what a nice guy. He was very nice over the telephone, and we made plans to go out the next night. It was a Friday night. But then the next morning at work, I thought, oh, gee, you know, I was talking to my friends, and I said, I feel like going over and canceling it, and they talked me out of it. I didn't have a car. They said, Vicki, go out. What harm is it going to do? So we go out, and we ended up really enjoying each other, and then I found out that he was leaving to go down to basic training in about 8 days, but we went out almost every evening for those 8 days. It just so happened that, you know, the 60s were full of turmoil, and the day after, or the few days after our first date, Martin Luther King was assassinated, and it just, that Bobby Kennedy had been assassinated just before that, and of course we'd gone through JFK and stuff, and everybody was just kind of in a downer mood, so nobody really wanted to be alone. And we dated for 1 week. Then he was gone for 7 months. He went through basic training at Lackland in San Antonio at the Air Force Base, and then he got into officer school, and then he was commissioned, and he had a couple of weeks off and came home, and a week after he got home, we were married. So we didn't really date one another, per se. We had, like, 6 dates before he went away, and then what's funny is that he doesn't remember proposing to me. I don't remember him proposing to me. I think it was all in letters we wrote back and forth, and I think he wrote something like, well, you know, I really like you, or something, maybe we could think about getting married. And I think that was about as romantic as it got. And I said, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And I mean, we're not talking, there was no ring, there was no, oh, I love you, or anything like that. I was like, oh, okay. It was like a career decision. And we got married, and I don't recommend it for other people because it usually doesn't work out, but it took a lot of work. We didn't know each other when we left. And,
yeah, I was going to ask, like, when you guys got married, was it kind of just like learning more about a new person? Because if you guys
only
talked for a week before, you didn't really know much about each other. So it's
we didn't really. I mean, we had letters and a few phone calls because phone calls were very expensive. Yeah, we didn't know each other. And then he had to go to pilot training in Big Spring, Texas, and I had quit my job. And I remember when we got in the car, we were leaving El Paso. And that's when it dawned on me, I'm going away with a stranger who's my husband. What the heck did I do? And it's like, he's taking me away. And it was just, we had to learn everything about one another. We didn't know anything, but we were alone. We didn't have parents or anybody else around us, and it was either stick together and swim or we were going to sink. So we decided to stick together and swim through it. And then we had just celebrated our 37th wedding anniversary right before he died. So it lasted until death do us part.
That's so cute. So the last question I have for you is, what is one piece of advice you have for me being a high schooler?
Okay, I thought long and hard on that, and I'm usually not a good person to, you know, dole out advice to people. I can kind of tell people what to do, but as far as advice goes, knowing you as I do, listen to your inner voice. I wish I would have done more of that, because If you listen, if you get that feeling like, oh, I don't know if I should be doing that, or, yeah, I really should do this or that, and I'm not going to do it, listen to that inner voice, because it's not going to steer you wrong. You know what's right and wrong, and that inner voice is going to be telling you what to do. And that's the only advice I have. That way you stay true to yourself. You're not compromising with somebody else. And, follow your heart, follow your guts.
Thank you, Moogie.
That's all. Love you.